Hello, and welcome to Higher Ed, KUT's podcast focusing on issues of higher education, lifelong learning, and exercising the brain. I'm Jennifer Staton with KUT 90.5, Austin's NPR station, talking as always with Dr. Ed Berger, president of Southwestern University in Georgetown, Texas. Hello, and welcome, Ed.
Great to be here, Jennifer, and I want to know, how are you today?
Well, thank you for asking. I'm doing very well.
Do you feel that love is in the air?
Love is in the air. Well, it is February. It's Valentine's season. So I definitely...
Shouldn't that be a season that should extend, you know, literally 365 days?
All year round. Well, yes.
Maybe this would be the end of war. If we had Valentine's year, maybe that would take care of it.
Well, I mean, there is the argument, you know, that you don't need Valentine's Day because it's just a created holiday to force people to buy stuff, when actually it should be a year-round endeavor. But
To buy stuff.
What we're going to talk about today is kind of a Valentine's topic, love of learning. We tackle issues of higher ed and learning here every week, so we're going to talk about love of learning. But what I actually want to do is kind of flip that and start with a discussion about maybe why we don't love learning more. I mean, you know, we've all heard students say, school is boring, I'm bored, I don't want to go to school because it's boring. Why is learning sometimes boring?
It's interesting. I think it's because we don't make it fun. I think, quite frankly, when you think about the experiences we had in nursery school and kindergarten and even first grade, it's all play. It's all play. It's all joyful discovery. And then, and I'm thinking in particular about math because, you know, I'm a math professor.
Yes.
In math, what happens is that over time, we then have a curriculum that is designed to suck all the joy out of it, all the creativity out of it, and it's replaced by, here's how you do it, here's the algorithm, here's the method, memorize this and memorize that.
Wait, you said designed to suck the creativity out of it. That's all on purpose?
Well, I don't think it's on purpose, but the reality is that's what it does. Instead of having education persist as a joyful discovery of ideas, as a joyful process of curiosity, it has become a totally curricular. A student needs to know this at this time in their life. In fact, let me tell you something interesting. I had an epiphany about 10 years ago. I'm going to share it with you. You know, students take geometry somewhere in high school, depending upon how talented they are, maybe 9th grade, 10th grade, or 12th grade, whatever it is. And they're learning Euclidean geometry. This is stuff that was originally discovered by Euclid back, you know, the ancient Greek. So here's a question I have for you. People, and a lot of students struggle with geometry. Where is it that we know that a human being's brain is ready to embrace the ideas of geometry at that age, at the age of 14 or 15 or whatever that is? The truth is, the human being who first discovered these ideas and wrote them down was actually an old guy. So maybe, in fact, we should be teaching geometry in the nursing homes. I mean, maybe that's the right time. So this idea that somehow we need to teach people at this time presupposes the fact that they're ready for it. Well, if they're not ready for it, then of course it's not going to be joyful.
There's an idea, and I can't pinpoint and say I heard it here, I heard it there, but I guess it's more of a philosophy or an ethos, though, that school or learning is not supposed to be fun, that you have fun outside the classroom. That's where you sort of goof off and get crazy and silly and laugh, but that those stay outside the classroom door. Inside the classroom, it's serious focus. We're doing serious work here.
Yeah, and that's just so wrong, because life should be joyful, and if you want to encourage people to do something and do more of it, like become a lifelong learner, it has to be a pleasurable thing. And so, in fact, and we use words. I mean, look, in the math community, we are so bad at this, and I apologize to all of our listeners on behalf of all mathematics, because we call them problems.
Oh, sure. Word problems, math problems.
Why would we do that? Why would we, the practitioners who are trying to...
That is a bit of a turnoff.
It's stupid. And so I every time I do a leadership workshop with educators, that's the first thing I challenge them. See if you can get that out of your lexicon. Call them puzzles, riddles, conundrums, questions, exercises, anything you want. But the riddles, it should not be thought of as a problem. There are no problems in math. There are problems in real life. There are no problems in math. And then we call things homework. Well, yes. Homework. Well, that shouldn't be called homework. It should be called home play. Right? Can you imagine? Have you done your math play yet? No, I haven't gotten to it. Well, start playing before dinner. I mean, there's a mindset here that if you call it work, it becomes arduous and unpleasant. If we think positively and we make those exercises joyful, curious, and entertaining, then in fact, it'd be an enriching life experience rather than a chore. And education should never be a chore.
All right, let's put that to the test right now. You brought another puzzler. And notice I'm not calling it a problem. I'm calling it a puzzler.
There are no problems in math.
No math. So this is a math puzzler.
Correct.
So lay it on us.
Well, it is Valentine's Day season, as you suggested. So this one involves taking off your pants.
Wait, can we talk about this?
Absolutely. It's totally wholesome.
Okay.
So here's the challenge. And believe it or not, it is a math question. So imagine that you have a cord of rope, let's say 6 or 7 feet in length. Take one end of the rope and tie it snugly around your left ankle.
Okay.
And then take the right end of the rope and tie it snugly around your right ankle. So you're actually making a half human, half rope loop. Your legs are part of the loop, and then the rope is the other part of the loop.
Okay, got it.
Okay. And your pants are still, you know, dangling loose as they always are. Now, the challenge is this. Is it possible or is it impossible to take off your pants and then turn your pants inside out and then put them back on, so now the pockets are kind of flapping in the wings? Is it possible to do that without ever cutting the rope?
Okay, I think I'm picturing this in my head.
Ooh.
So I'm thinking that the answer is yes, but we're going to have to find out next week.
I'm not going to give you the answer. This is a math hanger.
Right.
No.
It's a math hanger.
It's a math hanger. Otherwise, they're not going to listen to our next broadcast.
Right. So we'll find out next week. So can you turn your pants inside out?
With your legs snugly affixed with a
with
cord
the
of
rope. And get them back on without
cutting the rope.
Because
certainly you can do it if you cut the rope. Cut the rope,
right,
take your pants off, turn them inside out.
But we're all about clever solutions to these math situations.
You can't cut the rope.
Here. So,
absolutely.
Next week, we're going to get the answer.
And what a wonderful way to celebrate Valentine's season with a loved one.
Rope and pants?
Yes, and say, you know, look, darling, I'm going to try a math feat in front of you. And then either way, it will lead to entertaining education, which is, again, what we're talking about, right? It's making math and making education, in fact, fun and making it something that's a love of learning.
Well, and I mean, it is interesting to talk and think about that because you sort of, as I mentioned earlier, there's sort of an idea that learning is only in the classroom and you sort of keep that stuff there and life is out here and school and learning isn't here and sort of never the twain shall meet.
Let me, of course, you know, one of the things that I started when I began at Southwestern as president was I made a commitment that every single student before he or she graduates gets invited to the president's house and to dinner at the president's table. 18 people at this one table. And the really cool thing is I invite 12 students at a time, and the other 6 people are faculty, staff, alumni, trustees, VIPs. I've invited you to one of these things. And no two adults sit next to themselves. So you're always flanked by students, and we have a conversation. And there's always a conversation about something interesting that's going on. And then at the end of the evening, I go into the lightning round. I go around the room. And if you haven't spoken yet, I'll say, Jennifer, we haven't heard from you. And to me, that's a lifelong love of learning, where you're learning and you might not be an expert, but you can contribute. You can think, you can pose questions, you can try things.
Now, I feel compelled to point out, you say you're serving dinner at your house. Now, at your inauguration
at the president's
last year,
house. I don't call it my house. Yes.
At the president's house.
Thank you.
At your inauguration last year, NPR Scott Simon spoke. He was a speaker that evening.
Oh, no.
He said that you don't have any food in your refrigerator.
You know,
so what are you serving these
people? First of all, I'm a loyal listener to Scott Simon, and actually he's a friend of mine, so I'm not going to say anything too disparaging. But let me say, he came late. I didn't realize that in the evening. I mean, he didn't show up late, but he came late in the evening. I didn't realize that I was supposed to give him dinner. And I tried to have food that would be good for him, that would be healthful. And so I had cheese and I had, nuts and things. And it was more like a kind of snack food. And he publicly humiliated me on the day of my inauguration and said how the president's house is empty and there's no food. It's barren. And I must say that the laugh is on him, because since then people have brought me, I mean, literally, I had one alum that brought me a rack of ribs and a piece of tenderloin. And I've got four, right now I've got four filet mignons in my freezer that was given to me as from the holidays. And the truth is that people just feel so bad. They bring me jams and bread. And so, you know, Scott, in case you're listening, the laugh's on you.
Now, we're close to the end of our time. I do want to ask you, though, about this idea of love of learning. How do you sort of light that fire or instill that love of learning? It's not flipping a switch. We heard, a puzzler a couple episodes back about flipping a light switch. I don't imagine you can do that to get somebody excited about learning. How do you get somebody excited about learning?
First of all, it has to be intentional. You have to commit to it. And secondly, I mean, part of it is unlearning. To try to describe to people, you know, that learning can be fun and that that's part of this. And a lot of times students will say, gee, this is so much fun, but this is not like a real class. And our faculty have to point out, yeah, this is in fact what really is at the cutting edge of one's own scholarship. It's the joy of discovery. It's the joy of doing something new. And to engage students in that is to engage them in a process that will last them a lifetime.
Well, and we're actually going to talk about that concept of unlearning on a future episode.
Ooh, so there's another hanger.
Higher Ed,
another cliffhanger.
Another hanger. Ed, thanks for coming in today and for helping us keep our brain sharp. Dr. Ed Berger is president of Southwestern University in Georgetown. You can find out more at southwestern.edu and keep your brain busy by keeping up with the news and other episodes of Higher Ed at KUT.org. I'm Jennifer Staton with KUT News.